step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 651. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined this week on this sunny, sunny day, my sunny co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello, Lisa.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Just stay right where you are. We'll be back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah. But when she cries, it's not some ornamental sigh. And when she breathes, it brings the world to its knees. It's when she smiles, it's when she smiles, it's when she smiles.
It is Wednesday, January 12th, 2022. On the show today, we are going to play something from the American Theater Wing's career series on stage management with Alan Hall. And of course, Nicole and I will have a lively discussion of the world of theater around the world, including Austin, New York, Chicago, Des Moines, and Fargo. And then we're going to play some music. It's going to be one of those. It's been a slow news week. Let's listen to a little bit more of this song.
'Cause when she speaks, it's like my heart.
You know, Nicole, it's when you smile, actually. You there? Okay, we may have lost.
Oh, I hit the mute by accident. Oh. I'm sorry. I was just chatting away going, what a delightful little song. It's when you smile. I'm just talking into the void.
And there you go. That was from Lysistrata Jones a few years back. I don't remember the year.
We used to talk about that one a lot, remember?
We did. And Lysistrata Jones, if you remember correct, is a basketball analogy on Lysistrata.
Which is so cool.
It is. Do you have any idea why I decided to play that as our opening number?
No, I really don't, to be honest with you.
Well, I'll give you a kind of a hint. I was going to play To Sir With Love in this spot.
Okay.
But I decided to go with Lysistrata Jones because Sidney Poitier, who passed away this week, was in Lysistrata on Broadway.
Okay, I was like, we had some big ones pass this week, and I was like, who was in something that connected to this? And it was Sidney Poitier.
Yeah, it was Sidney Poitier, a groundbreaking actor. Only did four Broadway shows in his career, in his lifetime.
But you know what? He was so powerful. He seemed like he was commanding the stage throughout his entire life, right?
I am sorry that he did not do more theater because
Wow, what a talent.
Yeah, I bet you he would have been a fierce...
I believe my grandmother did see him on Broadway, and I'm going to ask Mabel about that this week when I talk to her. I'm sure she'll give me some great story and some epic moment and scene he was in, so I can't wait to have that conversation.
Well, you know, I can remember as a kid watching To Sir With Love, and still, whenever I hear that song, I just tear up immediately.
Yep.
I can't help it. And what a loss.
What a loss. 94.
And yet, not that it doesn't
diminishes it. No.
we've had several losses recently of a lot of people that are Broadway, but most everybody has been like at the end of their life. You know, he was 94 when he passed away. So he, again, for me, it's sadness that he's gone, but it's also a celebration of his amazing life.
That's kind of where I'm at with that. Now, the other loss we had is real.
Yep, we're going to talk about that in a second. Let's continue on with Sidney Poitier for a little while.
No, I wasn't going into the other. I'm just saying I was surprised that this one made me look at things in a different way, and the other one really just has stung me in sadness. It's just so weird how death affects us.
True that. And I should back up. I always forget to do this because we just jump right into talking about stuff. I want to thank Kim Simpson and another wonderful international folk bazaar. I just love listening to his show as I drive into the studio. And
I was out loud in the house saying, Kim is jamming it today. I am loving everything.
Yeah, so he did that early set with all the haunting bass lines, he said.
I love a bass, but I verbally out loud to myself was like, Kim is jamming it.
You know, I love a bass and I love a piano.
I love a piano, a grand piano.
Yeah. So I also need to say that, we'll talk about it. We'll continue talking about Sidney Poitier, before we go on. I mean, just, an incredible loss and, powerful. Thanks. Powerful. And
he's left us with such amazing work. I cannot thank him enough for some of the most epic stuff. I mean, his movies, his performances, it was just the stuff you still talk about.
So Lysistrata was, it did not do well. It only played, it opened on October 17th, 1946. And closed 2 days later on October 19th.
I thought it was later. I didn't realize it was 46.
Yeah, me neither. In 1946, it had an all-black cast, which is pretty amazing for that time period.
Because that's over 75 years ago.
It is indeed. Thank you for doing the math. I never realized, or I guess I realized, I didn't really note it before, but he was born in the Bahamas, a country in which I lived for a half a year.
We spent my childhood going there. It's better in the Bahamas. Lisa.
It's better in the Bahamas, better in every way. Spend a while on a Bahamian isle and you will never go away.
One of my, I've been talking a lot about the Bahamas. It's on my, I really would like to get back there and just spend some time. What a magical place, the Bahamas.
See, I have a different view. If I never go to the Bahamas again, I will be very, very happy.
Oh, I have so many great memories of the Bahamas as a kid.
Yeah, well.
I was bad and naughty. I smuggled hermit crabs as a child out of there. I didn't know better.
Yeah, well.
But when I showed back up with them in Houston, my parents were like, excuse me, where did those come from?
Yeah, well, I guess as a child, you don't see the things that I saw when I lived there as an adult. But that's neither here nor there. So the other shows that he was in, and why isn't my computer going to where it's supposed to go? I'm going to have to bring it back in. But he did A Raisin in the Sun.
I knew Raisin in the Sun. I can't remember what the other two were. Those were, that's where
I was. Lysistrata, and I've got my computer is not cooperating with me in a very fast manner. So I'm going to try to bring it back. I tried to go backwards and it wouldn't let me. So now I've got to go and do it from the beginning.
And I failed you by not sitting right in front of my computer right now.
No, it's okay. I always sit in front of my computer because that's where I see all my stuff. So bottom line is he will be missed. The other death that happened this week is not a Broadway name, not really a theater name either, but we did. Oh my God.
Entertainment. Comedy?
No. Let me finish. I lost the name of Bob Saget. Couldn't remember it. But he was found dead in his hotel room after doing a show. At the age of 65, which is just 2 years older than me.
Yeah, and he wrote a great post about how it felt to be back on stage and was just looking forward to everything and just so sad.
Yeah.
I've never been like this giant Bob Saget fan. Like, I've always appreciated him, but I don't know why that one really affected me the way it did. That's what I was saying. It was so bizarro to me.
Well, because he was so young and it came out of the blue. They found him. He died in his sleep. They don't see any evidence of foul play or drugs. So no. It's, you know, they haven't yet stated the cause of death, but what a loss. Now, I am a little too old to be a Full House person, so I didn't really know him on TV all that much, but and he was also the host of
America's Funniest Videos.
Most funny videos, which I also didn't watch, but he has this wholesome quality. But then the next time I saw him was on the documentary movie. Oh my God, I'm forgetting the name, but it was...
He's a naughty man.
Has a very naughty blue style in his comedy.
When he was on Full House and everybody's like, the Danny Tanner, and I'm like, people, that is so opposite of who this man is.
Oh, you knew who he was during that time period?
And it made me laugh because I was like, he is a naughty man. What a chameleon. Chameleon is just the best way to describe him.
True. True that, absolutely true.
But as naughty as he is, and you know, he did have a huge drug problem at one point. He was very open with everything. Everybody seemed to just, he touched people in a certain way and brought them joy. It's just, you know, it's special.
Yep, true. So the other thing I just want to say before we get back into any news is I'm a little down today. I have to be quite honest. I think
in the
war of Lisa versus the pandemic, I'm thinking the pandemic is winning, you know, a lot of battles.
I'm kind of over this whole thing.
It's hitting me pretty hard in the past little while. And so if I seem a little down, it's because I am a little down. And it's just, it has affected us in so many unfortunate ways, and I'm ready for it to be over.
You and me both.
So speaking of that, more and more and more Broadway shows and shows and theater and everything on Broadway and tours and around the world have been canceled and or postponed. It just keeps happening here in town. Hadestown, which was set to play in Houston and in Austin, postponed both to September currently. And
the Houston dates will be announced shortly. The Austin dates were already announced for the postponement, but the Houston will be coming out shortly.
Yeah, so it's just...
Hamilton and San Antonio was one of Hamilton them that also was supposed to be playing, and they canceled this weekend.
And Hamilton and Chicago as well.
Yep.
So it just keeps happening here in town. There's, you know, we don't have any guests on today because there's nothing playing. All the theater venues are relatively dark right now. I did look at the Vortex, sent out an email blast today, and they, of course, have postponed Ballerina for Blurred Ballerina that was supposed to be playing right now to an unknown time in the future. But on the brighter side, when you go, they've got just so much stuff happening outside the Butterfly Bar.
So much!
And lots of music and things like that happening. So yeah, it's just so disheartening. And Broadway saw its least profitable week last week.
The grosses and the numbers, and you know, I did at the beginning when I was reading it going, well, there's more shows closed than this and that. But when you look at it overall with the lowest week that they had, that Christmas week with the shows closed, and then looked at it again, it still was a sting.
Yep. And many theaters are starting to say, not only do you need to be vaccinated to come to the theater, but now you need to be boosted. So I think that's going to be the way of the world in the relative near future. At some point, I think that officially they'll say to be fully vaccinated, you'll not only have to have the two vaccinations, but also a boost.
Yeah, I think they'll change it. And the mask Vax policy did get extended in New York to
April 30th,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the 30th. I think it's the middle of April, but it's definitely April. So you masks. And they're saying cloth masks are no good.
Well, I'm not really surprised by that one.
Me neither. They're really
we're a little late to that game, folks.
Yeah, they're really wanting you to be in an N95 at the very least. And there was a thing on the TV today talking about the different 95s. And what they
like
are.
There's like 10 of them. I thought there was like two, and I'm like, whoa.
I did
like
too. Well, there's the one that we've seen mostly here that loop around the ears. That's either the M or the K. I think it's the M. And then I think it's the K95 that actually goes all the way around your head. And
so you have two straps.
And two straps, and it has it's basically a hermetically sealed around your face. And then,
correct.
So the ones that I wear are the paper surgical masks that they wear in surgery, but they don't say it's just because it leaks out from everywhere. And if your glasses are fogging up, it means that it's leaking.
Well, I always said that. People like, my glasses fogged. I'm like, well, your glasses are fogging because the mask is
leaking,
not on.
But that's true. so it's just, I keep wanting to see that glasses half full. I keep wanting to. But it's looking more and more to me like it's half empty. But if I was the Metropolitan Opera, it's half full.
I was like, it's half full for some people. And I actually thought some of the news, you were like, there's not a lot of news. And I found some of the news going on right now very exciting and interesting.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second because I'd love to hear what it is. But I do want to say that the Met has not missed a performance.
Isn't that bananas?
It's bananas. And I mean, I need to tell you that, well, I don't need to tell you, you know, these operas are not small casts.
No, they are not. And that's why I'm like, who's the little fly on the wall taking notes how this is all going down? Because that is a large amount of people in a large, large space.
True. Singing without microphones.
Correct. There's a lot of factors in here that are
I will say that with these huge casts they have, I would say, and I'm not an opera expert, so please don't email me, only a handful are the principals, which would be, it would seem to me that if a chorus member has to drop out because of a positive, or a supernumerary has to drop out for a positive, they don't necessarily need to replace that person. It's not like on Broadway, you know, each chorus person, it's hard, you can't, in most cases, if that chorus person is gone, you can't do the show. You need to replace them. But I think with the chorus in opera, you could live without one more soprano, if you will.
Yeah, and they even have actors that don't sing. My friend was an actor for one and only in the beginning and end.
Those are called supernumeraries.
But they're also not all in the same spaces or location.
Correct.
Or really see each other. So, you know, even though we see everyone on stage, they're not really all together all the time.
And then there's this lovely article in Vulture. And, you know, we talked last week and have been talking a lot about understudies and swings and covers. But there's yet another class that we haven't really talked about all that much. Long-running shows go back to their old performers. And there's an article in Vulture.com written by Jackson McHenry about Carla Stickler, who was an Elphaba on the road and on Broadway. Actually, on Broadway, she was a understudy or a cover or a swing, one of the three of those. She got out of the business. She's a coder now in Chicago. And she was on her way to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan with her husband when she got a text from the Wicked People. She hadn't been on stage since 2015 or hasn't played Elphaba since 2015, asking her to come in and be there in case she's needed on Broadway. And she was on a flight like the next day. And it's sort of very, very interesting. And it's an interesting article. There's an article about it. And then there is a question and answer. So I think it's funny. So here's one of her answers. It says, the question was, did they tell you specific tracks to cover for the week? And she answered, this time it was just to be an offstage cover for Elphaba. Usually when I swing into the show, I cover an ensemble track that understudies Elphaba. But this time they were like, we just need another Elphaba in the building right now. I think that's fascinating that they're going towards the, you know, some people.
So
that,
it's very something that is done in sports and football. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, well, they just took a page right out of the sports book. But, you know, I always say football and theater are alike. So
oh, they're
surprised.
Exactly the same.
yeah, it's pretty wild. You know, we're in a wild ride right now. Yep. Mr. Toad's wild ride. We're still all on it.
You said that you're liking a lot of the stories that are going on. What's your favorite story going on right now?
Okay, have you seen this whole, like, chess? Did you see the whole
chatter about chess may be coming back? Yeah. Does that excite you?
That excites me. One night in Bangkok excites me. I'm like, Mr. Tim Rice, please tell us more.
I'm sure I've talked.
You don't like it?
No, I saw it on Broadway, and
I thought you did.
I saw it also on the West End. Very different shows, the Broadway and the West End. And I forgot which was first. I think West End was first. What I liked about West End, they didn't do on Broadway, and what I liked about on Broadway, they didn't do in the West End. So not one of my favorite shows, but I do like the music.
I do like the, that's just it. I really like the music. So I would like to see what would happen now. I mean, and you realize that One Night in Bangkok is the last Broadway number to play on the top 40 billboards.
Oh, is it the last one? Wait, no. What about let it fly, let it go, whatever.
Let the Sunshine, Hair? That was before.
No. Frozen, Idina Menzel.
No, it didn't make the... I don't think it did afterwards. I think it was, it still plays on radio stations still. One Night in Bangkok in rotation. Still comes on the Bob FM here in Austin. It will still come on.
I love Bob FM.
Just random. I don't know why I found that really cool. I also, there was another theater group. Oh my gosh, I can't think of what they are. Come back to me. I'll think of it.
I'll come back to you. But this is a good spot to take a little break because we just talked about top 40 and then, top 40. And I truly thought Let It Go was on there. But so let's.
I'll have to look at that. It would be interesting. But I never hear Come On flipping around. But I know?
Why don't we listen to a version of that song? Here it is.
Let's do it. 秘密に縛られ人の目恐れていた偽りの私は。Hi,
I'm Lucy Arnaz, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin.
Lucy Arnaz.
Well, isn't that kind of funny? Isn't there the Lucy movie right now about her mother?
There is. I saw
it. Did you see it?
Being the Ricardos.
How'd you like it?
I didn't love it as much as others. I did enjoy watching it.
Yeah, I'm interested. I find it some weird casting choices, but I'm interested.
How did you feel about that version of Let It Go?
First of all, can we just, I mean, I heard her say Watashiwa right at the beginning, and I'm like, yes, I am. Yes. Oh my gosh. Can we just talk about Let It Go in Japanese? That was everything.
Well, so that album was just released, the Japanese album, and we're going to hear other songs in other languages later on as we go.
I just love listening to musicals in other languages. I know you and I have pulled up a few. We tend to like a lot of the German and Japanese. I don't know why, but it's just spectacular
German,
to hear it.
German is very popular for theaters. I did a search. I was looking
for... Well, German is English's sister language.
That's
so,
true.
I mean,
I did a search for Spanish versions of things, and I had... not only a difficult find, I couldn't find anything. I really wanted...
Oh, you couldn't find a Evita in Spanish?
Nope.
And I actually even think Antonio Banderas, I think.
No, I searched for Chorus Line. I searched for Chorus Line, could not find anything. It just may not be out. So
that's a bummer.
The Golden Globes happened this week. No ceremony, televised or otherwise. It was just live tweeted.
I was about to say, I just saw it on tweets.
Well, and there
is,
it was only tweeted. That was live tweeted. There was no, it was not on radio or TV or anything.
No, but I was saying, like, people didn't really write a lot of articles about it later. I was like, where's my wrap-up article? Like,
there's a few, but here's the deal. I heard an article on The Daily, the New York Times, about the history of the Golden Globes, and it's not a good history. They've got...
No, it's really not. I'm
well,
surprised
I mean,
they're still around.
Well, and they're not. They're on their way out, and their importance should be. And so I want to leave my comments to almost nil, because I don't think I respect the organization, and it's a self-serving organization. It has been from the beginning, and it's got its issues, and it has always had its issues. But our good friend Ariana DeBose, who was in West Side Story as Anita and did an amazing job, won a Golden Globe, and... which this makes me very happy. She is hosting SNL this week.
I was about to say, did you see that? But you saw that.
I did. I'm very excited about it because I'm a fan of Ariana DeBose. I was a fan. You know, she does the Good Bullet. She was in Schmigadoon. She's amazing.
And speaking of Schmigadoon, are we going to talk about your Schmigadoon lady?
She's in Search for Intelligent Life in the Universe, which is the
Lily Tomlin
show. This has not been done by anybody else. It's a one woman show. It's it opened off Broadway, it stars Cicely Strong. It's directed by Lee Silverman. And it opened on the shed last Tuesday night, and to mixed reviews, I'd say.
I was supposed to say to mixed reviews.
Yeah.
But, wow. How about tying in all those different things together between Schmigadoon and SNL to.
True.
I just was impressed
True.
By our.
And reporting. Another frustration. I wanted to read the review by Helen Shaw of. Vulture and New York Magazine. New York Magazine behind a big old paywall. Couldn't read the review. No way, no
really?
How. Yep.
So if you are on your phone and you click read only up in the top, a lot of those times the paywalls, they'll give you the read version without when you can get behind a paywall.
I never look on my phone. That's my problem.
I'm telling you the secret to getting around
that. That's my problem. I was very excited to see this thing called the 152 Project. Did you see this?
I saw a little blurb on it. Let's talk a little more on this.
So the 152 was created by Beowulf Borat, who is a Tony winning scenic designer. Great name. He's done everything on Broadway.
I was like, what hasn't he done? Yeah.
It's encouraging working designer, or it's encouraging and working, giving grants to upcoming designers, specifically upcoming designers of underrepresented communities. And what he's done, which I think is really good, he encourages working designers to donate 1 week of every year their weekly royalties. So among the initial donors is John Lee Beatty, set designer, Nevin Steinberg, who's a sound designer. He did Hamilton, Hadestown, and Freestyle Love Supreme.
I was about to say, I think he had a whole bunch of really big ones on there.
You were about to say correct things. Jennifer Tipton, who's a lighting designer, Jeff Snug, projection designer, and Tony Miola, who is a sound designer. So I love that he's got designers from across the board. It's not just,
And I think it's a great way for people to realize the importance of what all these people do and to learn more about what they do when you see their names and you're like, oh, and not just always talking about the stars, you know?
Right. So they're going to have open applications sometime in the middle of this month and are going to accept them up until May 15th of 2022. Finalists will be notified by July 1st, 2022. Then they will be interviewed by the selection committee and then announced in Labor Day of 2022. I just think it's an amazing project.
I think it's really great. And quite honestly, they're one of the first projects in a while. All these great projects and things have come out, but this really has, like, we're doing this, the dates. And it's not like, we'll be back with more information. And I'm just so impressed by that.
You know, it's funny. I was going to go, I wonder where they came with the 1 in 52 project. And then I just realized it as soon as I said it is. It's 1 week out of 52 that they're asking the designers to give money. And I figured it out.
You're very clever. You're a clever girl and you figured it all out.
Yep. So we've talked about this on the show before. You have not seen West Side Story yet, have you?
The movie, the
Correct.
New one. No.
Must see. It's on my critics' pick list.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about...
My brother and I have both been fascinated by it, so it's definitely on mine. And I just got my new sound bar put in, so now I can actually appreciate it and listen to the richness of the music.
No, you won't, because it's not on. It's not streamable, I don't think. You have to
go to the movie
theater. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's
anyway, but I want to talk about the character of Anybody's. And Anybody's in the... the standard thing is the tomboy character that works with the Jets, and they sort of they're not very nice to her at the time. This in the movie that is played by Iris Menace, who is a non-binary performer. Z uses Z and here pronouns. And this is just an article about the way that it was approached here. As a viewer, I loved it because they made this character kind of transmasculine and a very realistic and non-patronizing way. I thought Steven Spielberg did a great job. But there's this, and this article is in Variety, and it's written by Carol Horst. And in the article, she quotes Menace talking about the auditions. And Z said, I was like, oh my gosh, West Side Story. Oh my gosh, Steven. Oh my gosh, Tony Kushner. I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm doing it. So I went into the audition room, and I wrote a little side for Cindy Tolan, their assistant. And their assistant, Nick, and saw a bunch of trans and non-binary people there. I was like, wow, they're specifically seeking trans and non-binary performers for the role. And that was very intriguing to me. And at first I was apprehensive because I thought, well, that's what people are trying these days. People are trying to write trans roles, and it doesn't always have the impact that I think people desire and can end up being very harmful to the trans community. But I'm like, hey, these are masters of the craft. I'm at craft, and I'm absolutely going to give it this shot. And they did, and got the role. It's an amazing portrayal, and it's an amazing way that they handled the role.
Interesting. Where was this in Variety?
In Variety, you can find.
Oh, but we're going to link it on our site.
Yep,
right?
You'll be able to get it offstageonair.com.
Okay, it looks like the West Side Story will be on the Disney Plus by the end of January, and
there
it could possibly be on HBO Max soon too.
It is worth watching in the theater.
I'm gonna do it.
It's a big movie. It's got big stuff, and it deserves the big screen. And I also was going to look at, I forgot to read the article, but it's about Mark Rylance and talking about how he loves theater more than film. And
He's a very theatrical, I mean, he is a chameleon on stage.
He's got a background of theater, but for the past 2 years, you know, theater wasn't happening, so he did film, and now he's back in the theater. And I have not read it. It's from The Guardian, written by Charlotte Higgins. The headline is Mark Rylance, Theater's 1,000 Times More Enjoyable Than Film. But I can't say anything more about it because I didn't read the article. Shame on me.
Yeah. But I will say, what about theatrical things in film, like West Side Story, or like, can we talk about Denzel and Frances McDormand in Macbeth.
Yes.
Like, come on now.
Absolutely. But I do think that the medium is different and putting it together
is
different.
It
I
is.
Mean, when you do when you do theater, it's all done chronologically. It's done from page one to page 105.
Right.
In film, that you may
you
start with the last scene.
Unless you are Les Miserables.
Unless you're Les Miserables.
Didn't they shoot that all in like one take at a time? Like, wasn't that all weird like that?
I do not remember. That was so long ago. I have forgotten it already.
I saw that in the movies with you.
Well, speaking of Schmigadoon, there's a new biblical pop music called AD 16 at the Olney Theater Center in Maryland, which I looked up, and it's an amazing theater. I was not aware of it.
So this has an Austin connection to it.
Oh, I can't wait to hear. What's the Austin connection?
So they workshopped this right when the pandemic was happening and things got shut down. This was a last workshop performance at Zach. And we had local artists here, one Michelle Alexander, I believe, was in it. Like,
oh,
a whole bunch of people here that all performed and sang, and it was like the next day everything shut. That was what was going on in the studio theater.
That's interesting.
Over there.
The article didn't mention that. This is from Theater Mania. They did mention that it was developed at the Rhinebeck Writers Retreat on the Writer Farm.
It's
up in Rhinebeck.
Fascinating. It's when I first heard it, I was like, "What?" And it's rock, and it's fascinating to me.
Well, it was written. It is written by Cinco Paul, who wrote Schmigadoon, and Becca Brunstetler, who was with This Is Us, and is directed by Stephen Beckett.
Like, This Is Us.
Who directed?
And she just did two new shows at the Alley last year. Beckett did.
Cool. It's directed by Stephen Beckett, Strange Loop. And it says, and I quote from this article, AD 16 follows the story of a teenaged Mary Magdalene as she falls in love with a carpenter's son next door who happens to be a kid named Jesus.
It's crazy, right? I was like, what? When I first read that, I was like, when I first learned about this musical, I'm like, come on, let me read that again.
The score is inspired by 90s R&B, hip hop, and pop. And it's going to star Phoenix Best, who was in Dear Evan Hansen. She's playing Mary Magdalene. And Jesus is playing by Brent Frankenhauser. It's interesting. Music direction by Doug Besterman. Orchestrations, Doug Besterman. Music direction by Christopher Yostra, with choreography by Katie Spellman.
Interesting.
It's set to run February 4th to March 6th. Let's see if that happens.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm glad to see it made legs because, like, I was fascinated by it. They did this workshop and everything closed, and I was like, no, because this was not. So this is really cool.
True. So we're going to take a little break, and we're going to play Haben Sie gehört das Duschband?
Oh, you found German.
Well, it's actually in the show of the producers, in the regular, the English version of the producers. Here it is. We'll come back later.
Haben Sie gehört das deutsche Band? Mit der Bank, mit der Boom, mit der Bing Bang Bing.
Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello, it's Lisa and Nicole.
Jen Venske, who used to work here at Co-op Radio, was a volunteer here, is no longer. She texted me about this YouTube series from the American Theater Wing that's actually been around for a while. It's called A Career Guide. And she said, what do you think of this? And it was with Alan Hall, who's a man that I knew in my past life when I was a stage manager, one of the top stage managers for years.
Let's say, did you work with Alan Hall? So you did know the Alan Hall.
Yeah, no, I haven't worked with him, but I just knew him.
But you knew him.
And it's basically an interview and talks about stage management. I edited this down quite a bit. It's over an hour. And I'm just going to play the little bit in the front, which talks about the running of the show. Later on, it gets into the meat of what a stage manager, well, it depends on what you consider. So as a stage manager, I really enjoyed putting the show together from the casting up through opening night. And then a lot of stage managers really like the running of the show once it's open and done. And this is this
luckily,
really...
Luckily, you can have a production stage manager and a show stage manager that'll help with that.
True.
You know what I mean? Like if you like one versus the other.
True. So we're going to listen to that in a second. But before we do, I just want to, because I want to talk about this before it happens, and I want you here with me, because I'm going to hang up with you once we start this, because it's basically the last part of the show. But I was looking for music, and I found this one song from a show called Elfie Briest Das Musical. It's Till mit mir dein Leben, which means share your life with me. And I could not find anything about the musical, but
okay, what is Effie Briest?
Do you know what Effie Briest? Do you know what Effie Briest is?
No, what is Effie Briest?
It's a novel published in 1895, and it's huge in Germany, and they read it. And
I love it.
Yeah, and it deals with.
I love it because it says Das Musical, and you know we love a musical that has the title with Das Musical in it.
I do. And it has to do with adultery and intrigue and all that stuff. So I'll be interested to see that.
I might have to find a copy of Effie Briest for us to read.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling it is available.
It might be.
Yep.
We'll see.
Hardback and paperback, they say.
Yeah. Could be even digital. What do you know?
You never know. Well, anyway, I want to play this interview, and I want to right now say goodbye to Nicole and thank her for her lovely co-hosting duties today.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. I've enjoyed my afternoon with you. You've brightened my day a bit.
Me too. You've brightened my day a little bit as well. It was a little gloomy before this.
Well, I'm gonna keep jazz handing you because I love you.
Okay, darling. Well, you have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, that was Nicole Shiro, co-host extraordinaire. We're going to continue on. As I said, this is available on YouTube. You'll be able to get a link to this specific YouTube from the American Theater Wing Career Guide, and then you can see their others. So in the meantime, let's listen to, it's about 7 minutes of this. Here it is.
The American Theater Wing and the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts bring you the American Theater Wing's Guide to Careers in the Theater. This session, the Production Stage Manager.
Hi, I'm Ted Chapin, member of the board of the American Theater Wing. We're here to discuss the roles and rules of the production stage manager, and I'm honored to have with me today one of Broadway's top production stage managers, Mr. Alan Hall.
Thank
Welcome,
you,
Alan.
Nice to meet you again.
Yes, indeed. I thought it'd be fun to start. Recently, a few years ago, when Ronald Reagan was running for the presidency, a friend of mine, an actor, said that he thought that the country, perhaps instead of having an actor running it, needed a very good production stage manager.
The main thing a stage manager is responsible for is getting the number of actors on the stage every night doing the show the same way the director directed it when he left just after opening night. You are responsible for having them all check in, making sure they're there, establishing a policy about how, if they're late, how late they can be before you decide I'm going to put the understudy on for you. Because at half hour, which is half an hour before the show starts, the actors who are there really deserve to know who they're going to be acting with. So if somebody turns up after half hour, they'd better have a really good reason why you let them go on stage. Or else, if you put the understudy on, and one of my rules is if the understudy's been told they're going on, they go on, no matter what time the person turns up. Mm-hmm. And you usually in the afternoon will get phone calls from people who are not well or have been injured in a previous performance, saying they won't be able to turn up tonight. And so you call the understudy. You may call the understudy in for a rehearsal if they do a particularly dangerous thing on the set.
So is it your responsibility to make the decision that the understudy will go on, or do you have to consult with others?
The stage manager makes that decision and then tells the company manager and the general manager that this is what is going to happen. It's our responsibility to make sure the show is a whole every night.
Right. Now, the company manager, what is the difference between a company manager and a general manager, and what's your relationship as a production stage manager with those two different people?
The production stage manager is hired by the general manager, who is working for the producer. The general manager is responsible for the monetary side of the production and for dealing with the audience. The company manager is his hands-on person who comes to the theater every day and deals with box office, tickets, payroll problems that the actors or musicians or stagehands have. He deals with money, I deal with the people. That's basically one of the differences. Of course, he deals with the people because they all want money. They all
right.
want paying on Thursday.
And they get their checks from him
yes,
or her.
Yes, stage managers do not give out payroll. That's,
that's very good. One thing that's not your responsibility.
Not our responsibility.
But there is in every large show, is there not at least one stage manager stage left and one stage manager stage right?
Yes, yeah.
And they're the traffic cops.
Yes. And the desk is the controlling factor for actually running the show and has queuing systems on it where you can talk to every stagehand who is doing a queue, or you can communicate with them by colored lights. The system being you turn the light on and he goes, oh, I have a queue coming up, gets hold of whatever he's going to do. The light goes out, he does the queue.
That's
usually done with scenery movement and that sort of thing. Talking to the people is more done for sound and for lights. The light cues are always done by verbal communication because there's usually so many of them that just flashing a light on and off, you'd get awfully confused as, was that the 23rd light or the 24th
right.
light?
Right.
Whereas by speaking the light cues, you can make it much more apparent.
But also, whenever there's a problem during the running of a show, the production stage manager or the first assistant, whoever, there is one person who is in charge during the running of any performance.
Correct.
And that's you or your assistant.
Right. And if my assistant was running the show and there was a problem technically with the show, I would expect the assistant to solve the problem and get out of the difficulty and go on with the show.
Right.
I wouldn't come tearing backstage. Usually, if my assistant is running the show, I'm out front watching the show,
right.
Noting the show as it's termed, and making notes of things where I see perhaps a light has fallen, it is no longer lighting the actor it's supposed to light, or perhaps that the actor has moved and is in the wrong place because the light hasn't moved with him, and therefore you have to get the actor to move back into the light. With the best of good intentions, even the best actors in the world start to improve the performance the minute the director is out of the theater. And I always think of notes as being taking the improvements out.
That's a very good thing. Let me take you up on that notion. You are all, in addition to being the technical guru of backstage, you are the director's surrogate when a show runs, but also to go right back to the very beginning, you haven't necessarily been hired by the director, you've been hired by the producer, but you certainly, you have a relationship with the director, or somebody has said you two would get along, and so the director has a great deal of say about who you are, right, and that you are hired for the job.
Yes, that is correct. And there are also certain directors who have favorite stage managers who, if they can, they will persuade the general manager that this is the person who should be hired for the show. But I've always felt that a stage manager, when you first meet with a director to get on a production, the first thing you've got to do is forget about your own personality. The most important thing for any show is the show itself. The director is going to create this show. What you are is of minor importance. What you are is the person who runs the show. Your emotions shouldn't get into it.
Yeah.
And I find that I've always referred to myself as being a reflective person. I reflect what the director wants. The director wants, some directors want you to be there with them and help them to be the assistant director. There are other directors who don't want you to come near the directing. That's what they do. But they
right.
want your help in every other area.
That was just a little piece of that interview with the American Theater Wing and Alan Hall. I do love when he says, and I wish they could show air quotes, because when he says the actress, as soon as the director leaves, starts improving the part. And that was one of the things about being a stage manager, a production stage manager, that I really enjoy doing. That production stage manager, in the way I say it, is that he or she is charged with keeping up the technical and creative aspects of the show. So they do. I love how Alan Hall says that his job is to get rid of those improvements. And I'm seeing the air quotes whenever he says improvements. Later on in the interview, they go on, as Nicole and I discussed earlier, and talk about the selection of the stage manager, how they operate during rehearsals. And, you know, stage managers are, you know, typically it's a stepping stone to directors, those that don't want to continue to stage manage. So stage managers are directors mostly. So oftentimes directors will look at that stage manager as another directorial eye. And then some stage managers, as he noted, you know, simply don't want you to do that. They want you to stay in your lane and, you know, just maintain their vision as they go along, and you just leave the direction to them. So that's great. So you can, there'll be a link to that entire interview, and then there's other stuff. So let's play the song that we had talked about from Effie Briest. And this is called Til mit mir den Leben. Share your life with me. If you speak German and I just butchered it from a pronunciation, please don't email me. I don't speak German. So that's, not even a piece of it. Here's the song.
Teil mit mir dein Leben, werde meine Frau, sei an meiner Seite.
That's just a beautiful, beautiful song. So that's it for the show, pretty much. We got one more song we're going to go out on, and then we're going to leave. So you can get links to everything we said here on offstageonair.com. Once again, thanks to Nicole Shiro, my wonderful co-host, in putting this all together. Texas Music Mixtape with DJ Mark is up after hours, and I do love that. And hearing all that Texas original music. So we're going to go out with a song called Bricks from Witness Uganda. And it used to be called Invisible Thread. Actually, it started out as Witness Uganda, then changed to Invisible Thread, and then it changed back to Witness Uganda. So it had its premiere. I should say the music, lyrics, and book are by Matt Gould and Griffin Matthews, and it's based on the true story of Matthews, who managed Tarian trips to Uganda, working for a nonprofit organization called the Uganda Project. So it premiered in 2014 at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge. And then it premiered off-Broadway at Second Stage Theater in 2015 under the title of Invisible Thread, and now it's back to its original title of Witness Uganda, and it had a showing at the Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts in Los Angeles in February 2019. So it's been around a while, and the album is going to be released soon. They have released this one song, and which we're going to play now, called Bricks. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Bricks.